Stephen Covey has something called the urgency and important matrix. So it's like a 2x2 table.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, on one axis it's high urgency, low urgency. The other is high importance, low importance. So what happens is we tend to spend more time on the problem of the day, not necessarily the strategic issue of tomorrow. So urgent is it demands my attention right now.
Mm-hmm.
Important is it's something I really need to do, but I can put it off till tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think succession in a lot of companies gets put off till tomorrow. And you can see, by who has to go to the outside and who doesn't, who's grooming talent and who
mm-hmm.
isn't. So, and, sometimes there's reasons for why you don't have talent on the inside. It's no different than some of these college football teams, the kids, after they win the Heisman Trophy or something, or they've had a good year. The NBA, NFL wants them to come play for them, and
exactly.
So it's their payday, so they leave, So, sometimes you can lose talent for good reasons. But I did a succession planning for TRW Crediting, which is now Western Credit Union,
mm-hmm.
when Al Levy was the CEO there, and I gave a speech at the aerospace conference with their board chair on CEO succession, and somebody in the audience said, well, you've invested this money on succession, you've invested this money on development. What happens if they leave? Aren't you just sort of grooming somebody to go someplace else? And I thought, before I could answer it, the chairman, who was a senior executive from TRW at the time, he said, I thought he had a great answer. He says, they're still on our succession plan. So what that means is that he felt that by going someplace else, it gave them additional experience. And if they had a good enough opportunity, they could attract them back.
Mm-hmm. Well, that just helps the industry as a whole, too. Because if you're training people who are below you, who are going to be your future leaders, and you're training them properly to learn all the tasks and stuff to do in different departments and things like that, they're going to be a well-rounded leader for any credit union and perhaps yours, when that time comes.
The other thing I would say is that I think the best leaders produce leaders.
Indeed.
So in other words, and I think if you're on a winning team, part of being on a winning team is being on a team with a lot of people who are very good.
Mm-hmm.
And very good is something that if you don't invest in people, they won't stay very good very long.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, giving them an opportunity for additional learning and additional insight and maybe things that will groom them for you're trying to take mm-hmm. them makes a big difference.
All right. So lessons learned here, Jim, is it takes about 3 years to groom a quality CEO for your credit union. If you are a current CEO and you're on the verge of retiring, start training up your staff to bring them up to speed, up to par, and find out who the cream of the crop is, who can replace you. Or if you are an up and coming leader, take the initiative and go to your boss, go to the CEO and go, hey, I want to check out that department. I want to work in that department. I want to check that out because I want to be a well-rounded leader because I want to see the success of this credit union continue.
Right. Now, some people on that third point feel like, gee, I can't really move people around because that's too important of a function to move somebody in that doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so it works best if you have a strong middle management group. So in other words, that way the leader isn't really sort of at the center of everything. The team is. But I think if you're building a strong company, the people and the middle manager should be good too. So in other words, they can kind of help this new leader who doesn't really understand that function as well.
Exactly.
And he or she can help them too by broadening their perspective. And so it does work.
That leads me to think like, okay, so you have like a VP of marketing who wants to check out VP wants to check out the lending department, but this person is not an expert in lending, but they can still get a taste of it if they go to that person or the leader of the lending department. Hey, how can I help? What can I do here so I can gain knowledge, so I can further my career and help you out at the same time?
So, there's an actual real example of that at Randolph Brooks again
mm-hmm.
right now. But I think the person who has been kind of the superstar in their lending area is now moved over to retail. I think, or marketing, I'm not sure which. And then that person who is in the retailer marketing area is now moving over into lending.
Interesting.
So it really does work. And they're, I think both parties are kind of leaving a their comfort zone to go try something different, but it's really broadening them. And I think they're both looking at it as a great learning opportunity.
Why, exactly. Why not? It makes you, it gives you more value as an executive, and it does nothing but improve the organization you're working for. So it's a win-win, yeah. Pardon the cliche.
I mean, at the end of the day, cross-functional experience will kind of, the person that has good cross-functional depth, especially in core business areas, mm-hmm. you know, like lending or finance or operation, you know, retail. Mm-hmm. I think those people have an advantage over another candidate that's single function focused.
No doubt. Yeah. So what does the next generation of credit union leaders look like, gentlemen? Because you're training up people all the time. You're coaching them and stuff. What does the next generation look like for us?
Well, you know, I mean, age-wise, they're probably between 45 and 55. Mm-hmm. They're people who have been on sophisticated leadership teams. A lot of times, I was talking to one of the national executive search firms about it, well, a few months ago, and they were telling me that an interesting trend is that number twos are now beating out CEOs for some of these billion-dollar-plus searches, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And so the threshold of 50% has kind of been exceeded by number twos. So in other words, more than 50% of those searches are now being filled by people who are not CEOs. The reason for that is they come from larger, more sophisticated credit unions where they've had a broader experience mm-hmm. base mm-hmm. and they've done the things that the other credit union wants to do. And so they can bring that to the table. Usually when you do an executive search, which I did for 20 years, I've recruited about 80 CEOs for large credit unions. So I know a lot about kind of how it works from that standpoint.
Yeah.
But the usually you're looking for CEOs of that asset size or less. So if I were looking at an $800 million credit union, I'd probably be looking for people 800 or lower, and maybe, I don't know how low I'd go, maybe to 500 or 400. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking for number twos from, you know, billion or multi-billion okay. dollar credit union.
That makes sense.
So people are sort of trading off, I don't know if it's state-of-the-art knowledge, but a broader knowledge base in a larger environment for CEO experience, yeah. which is interesting.